So welcome everybody back to Veil of Sound. And I have to say that when only a few days ago, I was assured of doing this interview, my 15-year-old or 16-year-old me would have wet his own pants. Because the guy that I'm talking to was one of my favorite, and still is one of my favorite voices in all of alternative metal, post-hardcore, however you want to call it. So Jonah Matranga, thanks for joining the show.
Thank you so much. I'm really, like, truly happy to be here. Feels great.
Honestly, I can still think of a lot of evenings that I spent with your voice on the stereo, talking with friends and having a laugh. Not at your voice, but, you know, enjoying the time.
I get it.
And therefore, I have to ask the following question, and I have to read it off it. Because I I had to write it down.
Great.
So, Jonah, many people feel a lot of gratitude towards you, and you're always new and always original music because you have offered Mother Mary's and loads of solutions. But why, in the name of Alpha Centauri, did you decide on stopping to keep drawing one lines, become another, and join the Camorra?
That is just perfect. That was the best stringing together of Easter eggs. Anyone listening or watching or whatever this is, who can track all of the little Easter eggs that were just laid down right there, just write to me and you'll win a prize. I need a list. I need an itemized list because that was impressive. Anyway, thank you. That was very sweet.
So
a lot of projects. A lot of projects.
And those are only the projects where you also are credited for writing stuff. It's not one of those lists where you have guest vocals or
it's not like the Deftones songs that I sung uncredited and stuff. Yeah.
Are you not? Yeah, you're
like
you
the
are
Sade
not
cover
credited
that I sing most
it, right?
Of.
But aren't you
I'm not credited in that
special edition 2-disc thing?
Maybe I haven't seen physical liner notes in a while. No, I just went through a whole thing where I kind of wanted it to say on Spotify and all that, like, hey, I'm one of the singers of this song. But that was the Deftones management refused that request. But I think I'm properly credited somewhere in metadata at some point. But anyway, it's all fine. It's fine.
I think for everybody, look at your version of No Ordinary Love, because Mr. Matranga should be credited there.
Yeah, anyone who can chime in and say that they can find my name somewhere, that would be lovely. For years, I know that people were very, very, they didn't even believe me when I said I sang on it.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is strange, I think that it's very audible. I mean, like,
I think it's a very obvious difference.
Are parts where it's clear. This is not Chino.
Right. I think so too. And I guess it might be one of those things that someone unlike you who isn't as familiar with the sort of differences between Chino and I, sort of croony, softer voices, it might be like someone who says all reggae sounds the same or all punk rock sounds the same or all country sounds the same or all hip hop sounds the same, where they just don't know enough about the genre to tell the difference. So maybe someone just listening, it's the Deftones, they figure, well, of course it's Chino singing because it has to be. Maybe his voice sounds a bit different here, but I don't know how people do it. But to me, it sounds very different. But here we are.
Here we are, exactly. And for everybody, just as Jonah said here, I listed a lot of his projects. I hope that I got all of them. If not, Jonah, please correct me. But those are more or less the 7 or 8 major projects that you have been involved in. I hope I got that right.
I think
you did.
Did
I miss anything?
I can't immediately think. I was in a college band called Pieces of Fuck. You didn't get that one. I was in another college band called Big Booty. You didn't get Falling Rock from college. You didn't get Shot in the Dark or Turbulence or False Identity from high school or Fargus Martin and his Band of Woe.
Well, I just figured that you have a certain
You got everything real. Yeah, apparently so, right? No, I didn't name that one. But, you know, I like sexy. Sexy time is fun. But, yeah, no, you got every post-university real band. I'm just being a goof.
And then I have to ask, when we're already on that when we're already on that track, yeah. I have to ask, because with Far, you did a cover of Pony.
Yes, so right. Circling back to that. That's true. I think I was the actual human who said, hey, let's do Pony. But that said, we were already fake. We made up a fake band name called Hot Little Pony. So that was, and then we were playing with the pony imagery anyway. And we had all agreed years earlier when Far was playing a lot, we would have a little, recording that we put on before in the room before we go on, a little warm up music. And on that mix would almost always be Pony by Ginuwine, because it always got the room kind of bouncing and swaying, and it just kind of united people. So it's been with us for a long time, but I think I was the one that said, hey, that song's actually really simple and I would love to try singing it. And Sean really wanted to produce a version of it, and of course did an incredible job. So yeah.
Yeah. And for everybody, there is a story that I can tell everybody face to face, but not online. There is a wonderful story of my wife and that song. And don't worry, it doesn't involve having sex with me, but there is a wonderful story. If you ever meet me in real person and want to know that story and want to have a real long laugh, ask.
Man.
I will tell you after.
Now I want to know more than ever.
I will tell you after this recording.
Okay. All right.
But Sons of Alpha Centauri.
First of all,
would you now consider yourself a full band member, as you are now onto the second full length with the guys from England?
Yeah, no. And that's one of my favorite things about this collaboration, is that it was from both of us stated very clearly. I guess that they wouldn't mind if I called myself in the band at this point. But for me, this started as just people that liked what I do. And in particular, they were this instrumental rock band for years, and they're very inspired by this kind of 90s, I'll just say Sacramento sound, but more broadly post-hardcore kind of sound, and really riffy. And so I think I've just always been so available to people. I often write, does anyone have any songs they want to work on? And I really mean it. I like to, as much as I like to write my own songs and do things, and as much as I like to be in bands, I like to just collaborate with people who might not even try and make music for their whole income. They might have a job and they might make music, as more of a hobby. I like making things with people who have different sorts of relationships with music. So to me, they were just these really nice guys from England who had this hard rock music that was kind of atmospheric, and they wanted a singer for it. And I thought, I'll try this. And so it started out with just a couple of songs. It's been, several years now that we've been working together, but for a while it wasn't even shown to anyone. It was just between us. They were making things, and they're, paying me to sing on their songs. And for me as an artist, as a singer in particular, guitarists and bassists and drummers and keyboardists, they can all kind of hop from band to band playing different sessions. It's harder for a singer. So for me, there's something very exciting about being a session singer. And that's really, we've never played a show. I've spent, I don't know, maybe 10 days with them in total over the past 7 years. We meet up in a studio for a couple of days, and sometimes I record remotely. So it's a very interesting and intimate relationship that we have, because it's all around this music. But no, I'm not in the band. I guess they're a band. But I consider us more of a collective, which isn't trying to make some silly difference, but we're not a band. We don't rehearse. I don't talk about the album art with them. I don't talk about how they release their record. I don't talk about how they promote their record. I don't talk to anything like about that. I would always talk to them if they wanted to hear my experience around something. I'm fine with that. But they kind of handle it all, and they seem very happy doing that. And I am happy for once in my life. I'm either doing everything on my own, or I'm in a band fighting with other people about how it should be done. And so it's a real relief to have the sound of a band and have other people working on other parts of the band, and we don't talk about it, and they don't fuck with me at all when it comes to my lyrics and melodies. They just kind of send me the music, whatever I come up with, they trust it. And away we go. So it's a very lovely collaboration and I adore them. They're very sweet humans and I'm proud of it. And it's not a band.
You should be.
Thanks. Yeah, I actually, especially this last one we did, I've just been listening to it. They just sent me the promo pressing of it. And I don't listen to this stuff as it's getting mixed. I go in and I sing my parts and then months, sometimes years later, I'll hear a performance I did when they kind of get it together to release it or whatever. So yeah, I like it. There's like some bits on the new record that I'm like, fuck yeah. Yeah. So yeah.
As you have already mentioned, paid, there is one thing that strikes me that you are, or that you seem to be, one of a few people from the 90s and early zeros who A, didn't sell out. Anybody who feels offended by me saying that, think about why you are offended. And B, who still scraps a living from it. Isn't that the case?
Yes. Yes, it is true. I do not know. I know lots of artists that have had a lot more success than me. Tons. I mean, so many people that have opened for me over the last 30 years are now huge, huge headliners from, Deftones themselves, Tool opened for Far, Frank Turner opened for me solo, Chris Dashboard Confessional opened for me solo, Matt Nathanson opened for me solo. There's an endless sort of list of artists that I came up with that are huge. So I don't pretend, there's lots of people who had more success than me. And there's lots of people who had less success than me. Yeah. And the strange bit is I don't know a lot of people that have existed without a straight job for the length of doing it the way I've been doing it. And frankly, who have made as much different sounding shit as I have. I have been on major labels, so I have kind of sold out in different ways. And I've also made stuff way more indie and DIY than anyone would ever possibly know about. And it's been really soft music, really silly music, but then really heavy music, really serious music. And I don't really know of another artist. I'm not saying I'm the best, but I don't know another artist like me over the last 30 years, which I'm proud of. I'm really happy about.
I think it's difficult. I think that, for me, selling out does not necessarily have to do with being on a major label, but
exactly. It's a tough kind of thing, but anyone who's tried to make art for a living can tell you the moments, the decisions, the choices, where we call selling out happens. And believe it or not, it's not even like a big judgment for me. I do think art changes though. When there's a lot of investors in art and there are a lot of voices outside of the artist and the artist becomes truly obligated to people that are giving him or her or them hundreds of thousands of dollars, millions of dollars. And so what I came to discover in trying to interface with larger organizations and keep my kind of heart intact was that I could say no, they've given me some money. And then I said no to their idea. And there's this quiet thing happens where if I say no once to someone with a lot of money, they might ask a couple more times, like if they want me to go on a big tour or want me to sponsor a product or whatever it is. Say no a couple times, they're going to stop calling. And that's just sort of the way it goes. And so there's a kind of a circle that an artist can get into if they start saying yes to things. And there's nothing inherently wrong with it. It might even be good. I don't even know if I've made the right choice. I just know that it's interesting that I've ended up in a place that I don't see a lot of other artists, which is still being a working artist and never getting rich and never getting famous, but able to truly exist with art as my only job. And part of that is things like this, by the way, the Sons of Alpha Centauri, where I work with artists in ways that other artists just don't do, or at least that I don't know about. I've never heard of it. So who knows?
One of a few artists that would come to mind who have a similar history would be the first singer of that Scottish prog rock band, Marillion.
Yes. Yes. Thank you for bringing that up. Thank you.
He did a very similar thing. What is interesting is You have mentioned that, you know, you are being paid.
But even Marillion at one point sold a shit ton of records.
Of course.
Like,
I mean, like,
I never, the, I, that's one, the weird part. I never even got to that point where I, yeah. The most records I ever sold of any of my records was maybe, I think Water and Solutions at this point has maybe sold 50,000 copies or something, like a really tiny amount compared to these other bands. Oh, good. See, most people get that very wrong and they presume that at some point one of my bands sold a lot of records. Never did happen. And I love the Marillion story. I love that. And I've taken inspiration from a lot of artists who have had a lot of success, but stayed what I would just call human and stayed kind of with themselves. And the Marillion dude is definitely one of them. But Marillion was huge for a while.
Yeah,
I was never that. I never had that ride. And I'm almost even more impressed with him because taking that ride, it's a, I've seen people, well, a lot of people die taking that ride.
Yeah, and of course, you know, with having a name as Derek has, it's difficult.
Yes.
Either you're the fish or you're a dick.
That's right. That's
for
exactly
everybody
it's
outside,
very,
you know, like his real name is Derek W. Dick. His stage name is Fish, you know, that's like.
Yeah.
But one other person that
love
comes
that.
To
that.
Mind might be Steven Wilson, although also difficult.
Yeah, I mean, the people I think of taking inspiration from in my certainly Fugazi. You know, we were talking about my shirt before we started, and certainly lots of punk rock bands, lots of early hip hop entities. I take a lot from their simplicity and the just I would just call the punk rockness of it all. This just the real direct approach. And there are artists like Marillion. I think of the Grateful Dead, oddly. As bands that have done a more kind of communal thing with whatever success they had. And I've always been very, very interested in that. I don't really care about a gazillion people knowing about me.
Yeah.
I do love, however, being really closely attached to people in their lives and that someone can write directly to me and say, I loved your song that you made 25 years ago. And we can have a conversation about it. And there's no manager and there's no agents. I just like that process. But I have taken inspiration from bands over the years that I think have done a more personal interaction with their the people who like their music. Yeah.
Yeah. And I also think
Sons of Alpha Centauri is such a neat layer because I'm making music with people who have been inspired by music I've made. And then the music we're making then gets to go out into the world in this very sweet, simple way. And I get to be talking to you about it. And it's just a lovely organic thing. So.
Yeah, and what strikes with Alpha Centauri is that they're not only inspired by music that you have been making over the last 20-some years, but they're also inspired by some of your contemporaries. I mean, if you listen to some of the Alpha Centauri stuff, you will clearly hear something like Queens of the Stone Age.
Oh,
you will
no,
hear
that's
something like... Like
well, you'll
Caius.
Hear far and Deftones. I mean, you'll
definitely.
Like that's why I said the 90s Sacto thing is that they definitely have some Caius Queen stuff with those really tight guitars, but their riffs. I mean, they were so open. What I love is they're so open about this stuff. They're not ashamed of it or it's just music, but they're incredibly inspired by music I made in the 90s, and so it's a very surreal but wonderful feeling for me to get to sing to music inspired by music that I made 20, 30 years ago, but get to lend my voice to it where I am now living. I'm not trying to make it like that music. I'm just trying to respond to this music that was created inspired by music I used to make. It's a very funny circle. I like it.
So did the guys directly approach you and say like, okay, we would like you to sing one of our songs?
That was exactly the way it started. I could probably find the first email, but they wrote to me. I forget who it was, probably Nick. Nick is almost always the one talking to me. Nick wrote to me, and I think it was literally that. Said, we have this instrumental thing. We've always been instrumental, but we thought if we could hear any voice in the world, it would be yours. I know it's a really long shot. This sounds strange. And it took me a while, frankly, to warm up to it. I thought, do I want to sing over this kind of 90s riff rock? And the more I thought about it, and frankly, for me, it's a lot about kindness. And the more I talked to them and realized that they weren't trying to get famous or trying to have a big hit, they just loved making music, and they happened to like making this music that I grew up making, it just all of a sudden felt like, wow, what a beautiful thing I could do. I could just be the singer for these guys, and they would be able to have this vision come true. And it's no skin off my back, and it helps me keep going. They don't pay me a lot because they're not rich people, but they give me a little money, and I get to keep going. You know, but they're just people who work and make music. That's it. And I'm one of their expenses, you know, which I just adore. I love it.
Had you ever heard of them before?
No. I mean, not even close. Yeah, no, frankly, I get messages consistently from people making different kinds of music. And I've sung with other artists on lots of things that has either never come out, or it's been released, but they haven't had the money to get a promotional budget and find interviews and do things. So I do this kind of thing frequently, actually. This one just happens. They happen to be committing enough time and money to it for it to be heard by someone, which is part of what releasing music is. I mean, I would love to think that I could just make a magical song and the world would hoover it up and give me millions of dollars. But the fact is, this is a part of selling. We're back to the selling out conversation. Mm-hmm. If I want my music to be heard by a lot of people, there are some ways for it to happen, and they almost all involve a real commitment of time and or money, mostly money. Mm-hmm. And it's, there's nothing wrong with that. Again, I don't mean to sort of cast any aspersions on anyone. It's just true. It's not, a band doesn't come from out of nowhere. It just doesn't, maybe once in a while it happens, maybe. But most of the time, even when it looks like someone just appeared, there was a lot of funding to help it look natural and look like a natural climb. Yeah. And that's, you know, and that's okay. But so once I was convinced they weren't into that kind of thing, it made me more warm to them. I'm a little wary when someone comes to me, maybe even especially when they have money, that they're not trying to just build some fancy thing that I'm not interested in doing. I just like making stuff with people, and I like for it to be as humble as possible, because it's real easy to get swept up in this. You know, we're in a culture that has a word called rock star that has nothing to do with making music anymore. Like, you're a rock star. And
yeah, whenever I hear that, I automatically have a Nickelback song in the background.
Right?
I'm like, oh my God.
I know, but this is, and so imagine me being a singer and having me, you know, people call me this. And I just never wanted to be that. I mean, I suppose at 14, I had the same dreams as everyone else. And again, it would be lovely if a song of mine were heard around the world. That's a very powerful feeling for me. And I've just seen too many people get lost. And I think if I ever had larger scale success, if I had earlier, I don't think you and I would be talking right now, and not for any good, interesting reasons. Maybe
I mean, you would
so
not be supporting the underground.
I mean, maybe it would have been that. No, it's true. Maybe sometimes I just would have been, you know, so lost that I wouldn't have ever met, you know, because what manager of a big band would ever say, you know, hey, singer of the band that's earning us millions of dollars, will, you know, you want to go sing for a few $100 like for these guys from England? Like, no, because then it's a brand, it's a product, it's a thing, it's a very, it's a whole deal.
And
so
every minute you spend be paid.
That's right. That's right. This is just the way life works for anyone out there who just doesn't quite get it in our capitalist culture. And again, no shade on capitalism, it's whatever. But I'm saying in our culture, fuck even capitalism, communism, in our human Western culture that we've invented, there's just a ticket. There's just, what kind of life would you like? And they have to buy a ticket. I would like to live in a big city in a nice apartment. Okay, cool. You've got an expensive ticket. You've got to pay us a lot of money, and every minute has to be accounted for. And however you slice it, life is trading time for money. So for me, all of this is just figuring out the most fun way I could possibly do to trade my time and energy, my life, for money. Because money is how I buy my ticket. I have a little home in Oregon. Money is how I bought that. It's a very modest life. I've never had a new car or had my first washer and dryer in a home, in my 50s. never had a dishwasher, never had a, so many modern conveniences that many people have as they grow up. I just didn't do those things, not out of some sense of, oh, I'm so cool, but because I understood very early on, for every comfort I have, the ticket gets more expensive. Mm-hmm. And I need to earn more money to buy that ticket. And I never really wanted to earn a lot of money. I just want to hang out and make shit. So to anyone out there who's wondering how to have a simpler life, think of the comforts that you have and understand that they all take their price on your time, on your money, on your attention.
When you're talking about time, there is something that I was wondering. Yeah. In one of the first stand-ups that Henry Rollins did, he is talking about people who cost him time. Who, for example, at the airport, you know, people in front of a line who just waste your own time bit. By, oh, I got my passport somewhere. Let's look into one of my 30 bags and 20 some pockets. I'll have it somewhere. Is that something that
I love? I love that.
When people take your time?
I can be a real dick. I know lately something has happened. I've gotten gentler. Rollins, I've had many people, sometimes in complimentary and sometimes in less complimentary ways, call me kind of like a skinny, tattoo-less Rollins. I have a couple, but not like Rollins. Because we can sort of speak in this same very convicted manner that can be endearing, I think, in certain situations and really fucking annoying in other situations. And, I hope that Rollins would have the self-awareness to know that he's got that, that gene as well. But yeah, for me, I'm always inventing things in my head. So for a long time, I've dreamt of a system by which if someone, whether it's like another citizen has been, you know, driving poorly or being very slow or something for a fault, you know, and they know it's their fault, that we could just, without even arguing, I could just say, hey, so that just took a half an hour, and they can just like Venmo me $20, you know, just like, cool. Like, I'm sorry I took up your time. Let me give you a little money. Not a lot of money, just a little micro exchange program where people that take up other people's time unnecessarily can just give them a little money and just be like, I'm sorry, and just keep it moving. So yes, I think about that a lot. I definitely, these days when I'm cranky, let's say a customer service person, which is a thing that I think a lot of people can be frustrated about, and they can be a real waste of time.
Customer service.
No, but when I think a lot of people get furious with the people on the other end of the phone. And I think that's very sad because the person on the other end of the phone is just hustling like I'm hustling. They're trying to figure out a way to live. They certainly don't have a control over the rhythm of the dialogue that we're doing. So I'm very careful at this point in my life to say, I'm not mad at you right now. I'm really frustrated. I've been on hold for 45 minutes and you aren't able to give me information that I need to live my life. And I know that's not your fault. And I'm so frustrated right now. So I need for you, a lot of this is when they'll just be on this script and I'll say, I know that you've got a script, but I just need you to let me know right now, is this going to happen or is it not? Because if it's not, it's okay. I just need to go and I need to figure out another way. So I try to talk to people politely, but I am a real stickler for efficiency in public places. I don't think people should go to the post office without their shit addressed. I don't think that people should go to the airport and not have an understanding about how that process works. Like, I think there should be education around these things and then people should respect it because we're all sharing this time and space together. Anyway, that's hilarious that you love Rollins like I do.
Would you rather take the money or would you like to have your time back?
That's a great question. I'm more pragmatic in the sense that I'm either way, but since we don't have a system by which I can get my time back, give me the money. So if I had a time machine, I'd be like, cool, I can just rewind the last half hour and just go with my day as if it were still 9 o'clock and not 9:30 or 9:45 after the call. I think that would be an interesting question, but I'm pretty grounded to physical reality and how I make my choices. So that's how I came. Like, the money doesn't bring back the time, of course. I think we can all agree on that. But given that the half hour is gone, I'd rather have 10 bucks than nothing. You know, like that's all. It's fun to talk about this stuff. I
coming
know it's
back to the new Elf Sons of Alpha Centauri record.
Yeah.
Is it just my imagination or my stupid kind of listening? Or is there really even a little bit more 90s alternative metal on Pull than it was on Push? It sounds, just like you said, it sounds even more Sacramento than the record before.
Yeah. It's funny. I'd have to go back and listen. It's funny. I guess I think the two records, I'll say that I think Push is more early 90s dry riffs, and I'm a little screamier on it. And then Pull is a little more later 90s. There's a little more ambience. I'm not screaming as much. It was very on purpose when I heard the music. It had a more kind of failure-y kind of detached thing. I think Push was a little more fleshy and muscular, and Pull is a bit more refined, which is a little bit to me how Sacramento and how post-hardcore went. It started out pretty raw and screamy, and then, at least my favorite parts, got a little bit more thoughtful and interesting and spacious. So I would like to think that that's what's happening.
Then I have two analogies for that. Would you first say Please. That it's more, would you then say that Push is more Adrenaline and Pull is more White Pony?
Exactly. That's a perfect way to put it. And, you know, and just to put it back into my language, I would say that Push is more Tin Cans and Pull is more Water and Solutions.
Definitely.
The
other comparison that came up in my mind was, is Push more 13 songs and Pull is a little bit more the instrument?
Yeah, Red Medicine or some shit like that. Yeah, I mean, exactly. I think Push is a more primal, guitar and riff. And then I don't talk to them about any of this, so it's really neat. But I presume that they heard that and they listened back to music that they love and thought about what else they wanted to do and just got a little more brave. Mm-hmm. I feel like this record is more patient it's just a little more chill. It's a little more chill. Push was a little bit pushy. This is a little bit just more of a delicate.
How often have you made that pun by now?
Literally, no, this is the first. No, I haven't done a lot of interviews for Sons, actually. This is, I don't recall having a real interview cycle around Push. So I also think they're trying to do a little more with this record. Mm-hmm. So no, truly, I've never made that terrible pun, although a terrible dad joke is never far from my humor. So there you go.
Tell my daughter. She hates my dad jokes.
Wait, how old's your kid?
She's 11.
Oh, and you're right in the middle of it.
Yeah, and she, being a teacher, she came to my school. She wanted, as secondary school, she wanted to come to my school.
Oh my gosh.
And I know, normally I would never teach her because of legal issues, but today I had a substitute lesson in her class and she was so afraid.
Oh, seriously?
Daddy would be like, she was like, don't screw it up, Dad. You know, don't make fun of me. You know, no dad jokes.
I sang at my daughter's 8th grade graduation when she was right around your daughter's age, maybe a touch older. And she said I could do it as long as I promised not to cry, which I barely held it together. And I also remember around that age, she had a project to bring into school and I would always come to her class and help out and, you know, knew the teacher. And I said, oh, I'll just drop by class later today with this. It was this big kind of project that she couldn't bring to school herself. And I said, I'll just drop it by later. She said, oh, you can just leave it at the front desk. And I was like, no, it's okay. I'll just come to class. She's like, no, you can leave it at the front desk. And I was like, oh, okay, I get it. I'm being told to stay away. So, yeah. So, well, whatever. My daughter turns 30 this year. 30.
Yeah. What? You know, we're getting old, Jonah. We're getting old.
I know. Oh. Anyway, back to Sons of Alpha Centauri.
Is she getting is she getting her shit together?
She is. She is. She's actually in a really lovely relationship with a young Jewish musician. And I'm Jewish as well, and so it's really funny. And he actually, he's her age, of course. But he, many years after me, went to the same 1,000-person little hippie school that I went to, with no. He had no idea who I was or who she was at that point, of course. But I find it very interesting that she's dating a Jewish musician who went to the same tiny hippie school that I did. I guess I take it as a compliment.
Maybe indirectly. What is also interesting about
Freud would certainly like a word.
Mm. So what is also interesting about Push and Pull is that they're both releasing through Exile on Mainstream by my dear friend Andreas. So shout out to him.
Oh, cool.
To the Chancellor.
Yes, shout out to Andreas, who I've never spoken with as far as I know. But thank you very much for helping out Sons and I guess indirectly helping out me. I really appreciate it, Andreas.
And it's not the first German label that you and one of your or some of your projects have been on, because you have had,
I've had a, long a strong relationship German,
with
yeah.
the guys behind Arctic Rodeo.
Correct.
How does that come? Is there a certain love for German labels?
I grew up really poor, and traveling for me, especially internationally, wasn't really much of an option growing up. And I always thought, maybe if I keep doing this music thing as I grew up, maybe I'll get to travel to sing. So I got my first passport. I think I had one when I was really, really little, but my first passport that I went and got myself to go to England in 1997, I was in Farr and went with Deftones. And then in 1998, Farr got to play Rock am Ring in Germany and did some tours over there. And I got to kind of know Germany through singing in the mid-late 90s. And then after Farr broke up in 1998, Rock am Ring called me back and said, hey, I know your band broke up, but we would love to have you on the festival in 99. So one of my very first, I think maybe my very first solo performance ever in Germany was on the stage of Rock am Ring. And it was one of my first, there was nothing by One Line Drawing that was out yet. I literally burned CDs of Sketch EP number one on the Sony CD duplicators and used a sticker from their offices. I used all their office supplies basically to make 50 CDs before I went on stage at Rock am Ring. So it's a long story short, Germany has had a very special place in my heart for a long time making music. Not only have I worked with, I guess, with Exile on Mainstream and with Arctic Rodeo, but I also have worked and continue to work with Matthias from 30 Something Records. Who he put out Sketch EP number one on 10-inch vinyl in the early 2000s. And then all these years later, he's part of reissuing it. He just reissued a couple of Far records. He reissued a Gratitude record, these beautiful vinyl pressings. So anyway, I'm going on, but I just really want to give love to all these German entities that have been so great with me over the years. And I've had some of my very favorite shows in my life have been in Germany, and not quite Germany, but in Austria. There's a song of mine called Bitte ein Kuss, which is terrible, I'm sure, pronunciation of Please a Kiss. Song apparently that got on Austrian pop radio for a while and was a kind of, I would go to Austria and I'd play that song and it would be as if I had a hit or something. It was very, very strange.
Ein Kuss. Isn't that that one?
Yes. Christiana, bitte ein Kuss.
Yeah.
And I know how to sing 14 to 41. Field sane und 41, bist du blind und nicht
mehr. Yeah, but German numbers.
23, 32. Yeah, 21. Yeah. I had a thing called Disco Manifesto, which is on the reissue. And the chorus, the whole chorus is just, ich heiße Jonah, ich bin glücklich, ich heiße Jonah. Ich bin glücklich. So yeah, anyway, I love Germany.
But when we're already talking about lyrics, you have always had a knack for memorable one-liners, and on the new record there's another one like that. And it's we think we're very special, which really struck a chord in me because of the somewhat selfishness and somewhat looking on to that selfishness with a lot of, how should I say, with a lot of scrutiny, you know, noticing your own selfish character or your own thinking you're special and you're not. So I like that one.
Yes. Well, yeah, and it's called Doomed. So there you go.
But of course, the question that I now have is, what was the first one-liner or line in a song that really stuck in your head?
Wow. That, like, not that I wrote, but that's a,
No, not
kid.
That you wrote. You should have all your lyrics in your head.
Oh, no, I do. I was just literally, I was going back to when I was like five. I was like, wow, what's the first hook I heard? Because I love a hook. Lyrically, melodically, I'm so driven by that. Not to, again, not to be famous, but just because I love the puzzle of it. I love, why is an earworm an earworm? Yeah. Ideologically or melodically or both. Why does that happen? And so I'm very fascinated. For me, and this is going to sound crazy because I know no one else has really heard it, but truly, there's a song I wrote called Communication. I wrote it when I was a freshman, I think, in high school. So I know that that doesn't make much sense to international people. But when I wrote it when I was around 14, and the chorus is, please come talk to me because all I need is communication. Don't leave me standing on my own. All I need is communication. So don't leave me here alone. Da-da-da-da-da. And so that hook, I will never forget people singing that and saying it stuck in their heads. I was so excited that I had made an idea that someone could then take with them. And when they were very far away from me, they would think of this melody. And that just that idea still blows my tiny mind. So that's the one I can remember. As far as things that anyone would have heard.
And now outside your own music?
Oh, gosh.
Maybe not the first, one, but the one that... The one that
jumps into my mind is a Who song called Pictures of Lily. Pictures of Lily made my life so wonderful. There was something about the soft way that that was sung over this like really like intense music that really, really got to me. And also the subject matter, it's about a kid learning about masturbation and stuff. So it was this kind of very edgy song that was turned into this pop song, this pop rock song. And so it was very exciting to me. I remember that very, very clearly. Yeah. And then I will say that Mother Mary, I'll say like Elvis, like everyone. When I wrote that line, it was one of those ones where it just stuck immediately. It's I think it's the most memorable, not that a lot of people know it, but of people that know my music, I think maybe between that and Smile or Lukewarm, like I never want to say my best days are behind me. I just love to see you smile, and the Mother Mary lyric, I think are my three, the earworms that I think about the most and that I've heard people ask about the most. So
It's interesting that you mentioned Lukewarm. Whenever, or if, I mean, like 20 years ago, of course, when New and Original was still a very, very important band and people were eager and excited, and we are still wanting for a second album, by the way, but anyway.
I am too. I agree with all of you. Me and Norman talk about it all the time. So if we can figure out a good way to make a...
Get his shit together and to come up with...
Tell me about it. Thank you. Thank you. I agree. He's doing all this stuff. Thursday is very busy.
Whenever anybody asked, I would play Lukewarm.
Yeah.
That would have been like the go-to song that I would play.
Yes. I think that's for almost... Because of the way it's not so heavy like Far, but not so soft and weird like One Line Drawing, in some ways the New End stuff is right down the middle. And Lukewarm especially, it's kind of got a little punk, a little pop, it's kind of got all this stuff to it. So I think it is the first thing a lot of people would play, friend.
Yeah, for Far it would also be Mother Mary, sure.
Right, yeah.
No question about that. 100%. And it's like, We don't have to call it a charts hit, but I think that's the closest that Farr ever came to a real hit song.
Well, and
way,
indeed,
I don't think
outside of the covers, there's covers that have more stuff on Spotify, but Mother Mary is the one written by us that has the most streams. So for those that measure by those things, I find that interesting.
When we speak about one-liners, and I know that you have some tattoos, and I know that some people like to get tattoos.
One-line drawingers.
One-liners somewhere on the arm or somewhere. How do you feel about that? If somebody puts your lyric into ink onto or into his own skin?
It is one of my favorite things, and not for my ego, but because I love music so much. I have such a deeply personal relationship with it. So the fact that anything I've ever made, frankly, is in anyone's life at all. But the more permanently or deeply it is in someone's life, like when people use the music at a wedding or a birthday or a memorial or on a mixtape for someone they love, or they get a lyric tattooed, or they get since we're on the thing, I'll give you, here's the little thing, the love mystery thing. Let me see if I can do it right. I can get my form. There we go. Little heart with a question mark. And then there's the other one. And so this, I can't do that one as well. Anyway, this image, this heart with a question mark wrapped around it. So many people have come to me over the years having this on them. And I just am so, I don't even know what to say, but I'm so grateful for it, because I think all we're here to do is take care of each other and support each other in life and figure out different ways to do that. So if anything I've ever sung or said or anything helped someone get through a tough time in their life, I mean, this is something that I can only be grateful for.
Do you have, outside of your own question mark heart, any musical tattoos? You don't need to show, but
I don't.
No.
Yeah, no. The only other one I have is related to my daughter. It's an H right in the, like right below my sternum and above my belly button, right at the center of me. So her name is Hannah. And so I got an H on my belly when she was very, very little. So that's it. I've got an H and the two matching love mystery tattoos. I have considered other musically related things, but I have not done it. But I think if I were more of a tattoo person, if I liked that process more, then I would have musically related imagery and lyrics and stuff. I think that's definitely a thing I would put on my body, but I just don't really put, I haven't started putting other things on my body. It's a little painful and a little expensive for me.
Yeah, but you know, that way you're never going to be Roland's, right?
Yeah, that's right. And in that way, I'll take it. I love Rollins. Henry, you're fucking incredible. You're an inspiration. And you're also a little bit of a cautionary tale. So I don't... I'm just gonna. Yeah. I'll be me. You can be you.
That's true. I think only Henry can do stuff that he does and get away with it. Right.
That's right. That's right. No one should try and be Rollins. It's not Rollins. It's not gonna work out for you. It doesn't even work out for him sometimes. So imagine someone else.
That's true.
Yeah. Anyway. Yeah.
So Jonah, first of all, thanks for all the insight. But of course, nobody leaves the sound interview without having to go through the infamous quickfire round. That means you'll always get two alternatives, like Pepsi versus Coca-Cola.
Great.
Burger King versus McDonald's, stuff like that. You always get two alternatives, have to choose.
And so would a legal answer to that be, fuck fast food, it's poison? Would that be
a legal answer? That's cool, but basically all the stuff you'll get is music.
Yeah, I get it. I get it.
Let's start off with something simple. I know you contributed to a Jawbreaker tribute a few moons ago. I like Jawbreaker, but I still love Jets to Brazil more. So that's your question. Jawbreaker or Jets to Brazil?
Jawbreaker. I can extrapolate if you want. I mean, Jets is great. And Blake is a fucking genius. So I'm not even going to try, and Jets was on our label, was on J-Tree, was on New End and One Line Drawings.
That's why
label,
I was giving you that one.
Yeah. So just, I don't mean to cast any, but to me, Jawbreaker, they're some blueprint bands, and Jawbreaker is a little bit of a blueprint band. They really did a thing that inspired, I know they're famous and stuff, but they did a thing that I think inspired a lot of fucking bands and lyricists. Blake is, I think, I mean, inspired me a lot. Anyway, so yeah, Jawbreaker. I'll almost always go for the earlier, more innovative thing than the later thing, but let's see what happens.
Okay, let's test you on exactly that one. Yes, Fugazi.
This is good.
13 songs or a repeater?
It's got to be 13 songs. I love Repeater, and I would say even In on the Killtaker is actually might be my favorite Fugazi record. Mm-hmm. But I am a person who very studiously differentiates between favorite and best. I can have a thing that's my favorite, but best, there's nothing but 13 songs. I mean, 13 songs is just one just fucking hit to the face after another. It's ridiculous, that record. It's ridiculous.
Let's test it again. Deftones, which song is better, Seven Words or Passenger?
Oh, well, you would have had me, because I will definitely say that White Pony is the greatest record they've ever made, followed by Around the Fur. I'm not a big adrenaline guy. I understand it's them, and you know, that's the band I grew up with most, is the adrenaline band. It's not my favorite. I think they really did a special, special thing on White Pony.
Yeah. And so, it will never be top. No, sorry, guys.
No, I don't think so. It was just a moment in time. They just found it's funny because they wanted me to help write vocals for that record. They sent me the instrumental tracks and I couldn't make sense of them, honestly. I thought this sounds pretty good, but I don't really know where you guys are going and I don't really have anything for it. And then I heard what Chino did over it. And I thought, God damn it, that motherfucker. So anyway, but that said, Passenger, I don't think is, I hardly even rate that song. I'm not a Maynard fan, first of all. But also, I don't think that song is, to me, Digital Bath is the fucking track.
When I wrote this down, I thought about that one and I wasn't sure.
Okay, but, Digital Bath above all. Digital Bath is one of the greater rock pop accomplishments. I can't even believe my friends did it. I just think it's such a beautiful, spooky, glorious tune. Anyway, yeah.
So, but you are aware what you just threw your friends under a bus.
Yes, no. Deftones is 1,000,000%.
Since back then, and I don't know how you did that.
I said the same thing a million times. I think the same thing about Be Quiet and Drive. I covered that one. You know, they have made two songs that truly are some of my favorite musical compositions. And I don't have a lot of other people. I love a lot of music by people I know, but I don't love music just because I know somebody. I love it because it fucking gets to me and rips my heart out and my face off. And Be Quiet and Drive and Digital Bath both kind of did that. So kudos to them. And it is a very much an exception to the rule. Adrenaline was a blueprint of a lot of things. And I think they did more interesting things there on their next two records.
As I know that you at least must have a little knack for a certain Icelandic singer, I'll give you two songs by Björk. It's Oh So Quiet versus I've Seen It All.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, I can't front on It's Oh So Quiet. I mean, I think that is the song that got her name out further into the world than any other. I know it's really gimmicky and it's a Spike Jonze video and all that, but what a fucking tune. What a weird, innovative pop car crash, like pop jazz, screamy. It's just astonishing. So I'm a big Sugar Cubes guy. So if you had said, you know, Cold Sweat or Birthday, that might have even beat It's Oh So Quiet. I think it definitely would, actually. But as far as Björk's solo career, the only thing above It's Oh So Quiet for me is Hyper Ballad. Hyper Ballad, I'll take. That's just the fucking jam. Oh So Quiet's probably second. Army of Me is pretty great. Yeah, but anyway, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Do you know that Army of Me is the only song, as far as I know, people correct me if I'm wrong, but as far as I know, Army of Me is the only cover track that Helmut have ever done.
Fucking cool. Great, great tidbit. I certainly can't recall anything else. Yeah, and of course, that's one of those tunes. The minute you heard that song, you thought, oh, there, someone's going to do this with guitars. I mean, it's practically a Helmut song just with synths. Yeah, fuck yeah. Great one.
As a lot of people have, at least in my circle of friends, have always said, like, oh, Jonas just sounds like an American version of an 80s indie pop, indie rock singer from England. I'll give you two, like, V2 iconic English indie rock bands, The Cure versus The Smiths.
Cool. Oh, good one. I think it has to be The Cure at this point.
And let's forget about the politics of Morrissey.
Oh, wow. Okay, wait, it might be back then. No, it's not even so much politics, but it's tough. Morrissey has just proven himself to be such a fucking idiot. Partly, yes, his views, but partly not showing up for concerts and just being this bizarre diva. So I have to admit, it has colored my whole thing. I would say, gosh. No, I'll just say The Cure. The Smiths have really incredible things that I can't even undersell. Johnny Marr is really, really something special. And Morrissey, for all of his shortcomings, is just an astonishing lyricist and singer and presence. So we're talking titans of music here.
Yeah.
But The Cure... I've seen The Cure more recently, and goddamn, they're just such a band. And Robert Smith, of course, is just truly an iconic singer. I mean, what is it? Friday I'm Love or whatever?
No.
That's a great track, but no, the vocal thing was Why Can't I Be You. The vocal in Why Can't I Be You is one of the more unhinged mainstream pop vocal tracks that you will ever hear in your life. If you probably don't even know it because you've just heard it and think, oh, that's not special. Listen to Robert Smith sing Why Can't I Be You. It is fucking weird and psychopathic and lovely. Anyway, so I'm going Cure.
And there's another reason why I would always go Cure is I can listen to their albums in full.
That's what I'm saying. Thank you for putting it much more simply than I did. The Cure have an album vibe. The Smiths have made songs that will live forever, that are these little moments in time, but I don't listen to Smith's records back to front or whatever, whereas I always put a Cure album on. Thank you. Perfectly said.
The old question.
Ah.
The one that we'll never settle on. The Beatles versus the Stones.
I'm a Beatles guy. Ultimately, I mean, Stones are something special, and I think most people who don't get the Stones, it's a little bit like Aerosmith. You've got to go back and listen to and even watch early, and by early I mean like pre 1972 or 5 or something Stones. Then you can kind of understand how magical that. Yeah, it's stunning because we're all used to the kind of old, tired bullshit Stones. Our whole lives have been filled with it, so it's hard to say. But when I saw some earlier footage of them, I did understand, oh, okay, this is why this band is still around all these years later, frankly, and it's such an institution. Yeah. But anyway, Beatles, ultimately. I mean, it's just once you really go through the catalogs, there's not a lot of...
And I don't really know if you noticed, Beatles, but it's the same thing. Stones, huge hits, but Beatles album.
Beautifully said. Yep. And Stones, like you, these moments, these. Yeah.
Mm. I know that you are somewhat of a Beatles. Star Wars fan, thinking of some of the pictures and some of the old online one-line drawings. So I'll give you this time three alternatives: the original trilogy, the prequel trilogy, or the sequel trilogy. Which one is your favorite?
R2 says... And what that means is that there are really only three Star Wars movies.
Yeah,
they are
exactly.
A New Hope, Empire Strikes Back, and Return of the Jedi. Those are the three Star Wars movies. The new ones are cool, and it's cool they're continuing the universe, and I'm happy they are, and it's fun to look at all the imagery and all that stuff, but there are only three Star Wars movies.
Well said. So, two more. You can choose between Southern California aka everything up to, let's say, Santa Monica,
okay,
versus Northern California.
Oh, I mean, I'm a northern guy. I mean, I lived in the Bay Area for 20 odd years. I went to the university near LA, but yeah, no, I mean, basically, you could say this for the whole planet, really, but California is just burning from the south up. So really, just the more north you are as a creature, the less insane it is. So I respect, you know, the lovely weather, and there's a lot of beauty in Southern California. And further down into Mexico and everything. But yeah, I'm a northerner.
Last question.
Yes.
Would you rather dye your hair or wear a wig?
I love that it's all going back to this circle. It's so good. I would only, in either case, I would never dye my hair or wear any sort of device to make myself look younger. I have some vanity, but I won't spend a bunch of money or time to try and do it. So I'll try and take good care of myself. But either way, it wouldn't be, the difference for me in that question is a little bit more, would I do it for fun? Hell yes. I am very curious about wigs, actually. And I have colored my hair before, and I love fucking with my appearance. I love it when people, I love drag. I love when people mess with their appearance. And I believe the statement, we're all born naked and the rest is drag. Like I believe that the outfit I'm wearing right now is my drag. Your beard is your drag. Like it's, we all have a thing. So I'm not shying away from that, but that's right. But so as we talked about earlier, my hair is its natural color. That you're looking at my actual natural color. I'm 54 and I still have dark hair. I don't know why. But whatever. But when I start wearing wigs, wigs might come sooner because I'm kind of getting into drag and I'm curious about that. So wigs you might see sooner. When you start seeing my hair be funny colors and all that, that probably means I've gone gray and I'm a little bit vain about it, but also I want to use it as an excuse to be playful.
Jonah, thanks for all your time. Thanks for the wonderful
answer. Oh, this was a blast. What a fun time this was, man. You came
prepared. Sometimes
prepared.
Interviews can be nice, huh?
A long, long time ago, I remember I did my first interviews and I was very serious about them. And I realized that A, I talk so much, and B, there's only so much space to in print. This is back when interviews were for print. And so I noticed that I'd get misquoted a lot. So then I would get very careful about what I said, and I'd be very studied in my interviews, and I would still get misquoted, but then I would have much less fun. So now I'm back to just babbling and being myself. I have no idea. I love that this is unedited, by the way. This is what I want, is unedited conversations, the good, the bad, the ugly, all the nonsense. People get to hear it, the editing part, whatever. But this was why I'm saying all this to you right now, is that I go into it like, this is just a conversation that you and I are having. This is just, we're just talking. I love that anyone's going to hear it. I love that anyone gives a shit about it. But if I don't have a fun conversation with you, then none of the rest is that worth it to me. And I think we've just explained a lot about my whole career there, and about the Sons of Alpha Centauri record. Like, I'm here. I'm on that record because I want to be on it. I'm talking to you because I want to talk. I'm presuming that you're doing this not in some begrudging bullshit way, but because you love it. And I just go into everything assuming everyone loves it like I do. So thank you for loving it like I do, man.
Yeah, we definitely, every interview we do is out of curiosity and love for the artist.
I felt that the whole interview. I have felt that the whole time.
For everybody out there, we get a lot of requests for interviews. But there are some things that I will never interview. So certain bands will never be on this platform for various reasons. And most of those reasons are related to one thing. They don't spread enough love. They spread too much hate. And that we don't need that here on the Veil of Sound.
Well said. Well said. Love you, Veil of Sound. Thank you for everything.
So, Jonah, enjoy the rest of your day. It is 11, right? In Oregon right now?
11:11 even.
See? Here it's 8 p.m., so I'll bring the kid to bed and enjoy the rest of your day, my friend.
Give her a hug for me. I'll talk to
I
you
will.
Soon. Take care, man.